Now, it's good to welcome back Brian Hughes, who, as I'm sure you know by now, is a consultant solicitor at Shenfield-based Rayner Hughes. And the last few times you were here, Brian, you were looking at many aspects relating to issues connected with tenancy agreements between landlords and tenants. And leading on for that, I believe you're going to be looking at yet another aspect. Is that right?
Yes, that's right, Scott. Today, I'm going to be looking at assured shorthold tenancies, which, as I've previously intimated, is a very complex subject indeed. So involved, in fact, that top lawyers have written whole books on the subject, so we can but just scratch the surface today. As I said last time, assured shorthold tenancies, which I shall call ASTs, are written contracts between a landlord and a tenant, which set out the rights and responsibilities of each party during the period of the rental agreement. ASTs can only apply to tenants who actually intend to live in the accommodation. And throughout this explanation, I'll be referring to the position in English law, because Scottish and Welsh law may be different. Mm-hmm. Oral or other unwritten informal rental arrangements, as distinct from ASTs, offer no protection from interference by the landlord.
So what sort of people would enter such an informal arrangement?
Well, they're usually on benefits, and until recently, these tenants had their rent paid directly to their landlords instead of it being paid to themselves. The rent was deducted from their benefits, and they never saw it. But with the recent introduction of universal credits, payment of the total benefits are now made to the recipient direct, many of whom may have then spent their rent money on essential food, clothing or heating and other necessities or non-necessities, whilst others may not have received their credits promptly and have not known how to obtain emergency payments. And if the unfortunate tenants have problems paying the rent, they can finish up on the street with their possessions around them. You'll doubtless have read in the papers about unscrupulous landlords who do this sort of thing. Such unscrupulous landlords will also often enter the accommodation unannounced, eject any tenant who complains about defective premises, or overcharge on rent or the provision of services like electricity.
Okay, so let's take a look at ASTs proper. What are the real differences here?
Well, young people, singles, couples and groups of three or more friends, or sometimes students at the same college or university, will have found a flat or a house to rent. The rental figure will not usually include the cost of domestic rates, which is an occupier's liability. It will definitely not include the cost of water, gas and electricity. But on the other hand, there'll be no obligation to contribute to the cost of maintenance of the accommodation, the replacement of defective wiring, or the cost of servicing things like the boiler or repairing the wiring or the plumbing. The AST will have fairly stringent clauses relating to the replacement of items damaged by the tenants themselves, carpet cleaning and generally putting the property back into the same condition as the tenants found it, but I'll come back to that in a moment. Advertisements for these ASTs may or may not mention the fact that the tenant will have to come up with a rental deposit in addition to the monthly rent, and that deposit is usually 3 months' rent up front, which is paid into a specified deposit account, not, I hasten to add, into a deposit account controlled by the landlords. Landlords have had a habit of hanging on to deposits deposited with them, so now the deposit holder is independent.
That's good. So let's get down to brass tacks. What rights do ASTs actually give tenants?
Well, first off, they give the tenants a legal right to live in a property for a set period of time, which may be 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, or whatever is agreed. This is known as a fixed term tenancy. Secondly, an AST gives the tenant the right to live in accommodation undisturbed, the right to live in a property in good repair, the right to information about the tenancy, and in particular, protection from eviction. Now, this is not the same thing as having to vacate the accommodation if the landlord serves a notice 2 months before the expiration of the AST. Landlords, incidentally, are less likely to want to serve these notices if they have good tenants, because it might deter them from staying. But managing agents, I regret, have few reservations about doing so. The fixed-term tenancy might be converted into a periodic tenancy on a week-by-week or month-by-month basis after the expiration of the original agreement. But some managing agents will try to hold the tenants to the fixed term, if they like it and want to stay in it beyond the expiry date, they have to enter into a fresh AST, and the managing agents can then charge another set of fees. They can also increase the rent.
You've got a thing about managing agents, haven't you? You've raised this before. they're the evil people in this, by the sounds of things. But what right? What does the right to live in accommodation undisturbed mean?
Well, basically it means that the landlord and other people cannot freely enter whenever they want to, or in any way interfere with the tenant's right to live there.
So what would be the situation regarding pets?
Well, basically, this depends on the tenancy agreement. Landlords in particular who let fully furnished flats may, for example, quite reasonably object to cats which scratch the fabric on their sofas or dogs which chew the legs off their chairs. So they can lay down rules which a prospective tenant can either accept or look elsewhere for accommodation.
So what other rights do ASTs confer?
Well, the tenant has a right to information about their tenancy. And since 1997, the tenant has had the right to ask their landlord to provide a statement of the terms of their tenancy. The information the landlord has to supply is the start date of the tenancy, the amount of the rent, the dates on which it's to be paid, how and when the rent may be changed, and the length of any fixed term. And that information must be provided within 28 days of the request being made. The landlord has to keep the structure and exterior of the property in which the accommodation is situated in good repair. And this obligation includes the roof, the guttering, the walls, excluding any internal decorations like the wallpaper, the windows and the doors.
So effectively, you could have wallpaper hanging off the walls and that doesn't count.
Yes, but you need to make sure that anything like that was noted in a schedule of condition before you moved in, or you might receive a bill for replacing it. The landlord must, however, keep the equipment for the supply of gas, electricity, heating, water, and sanitation in good repair. The accommodation must have a valid gas safety certificate for all gas appliances, and any furniture in it should be fire resistant.
So how significant is this schedule of condition?
Well, it's very significant. The landlord can deduct the cost of putting your accommodation back in the same condition as you found it from your deposit, a bit like hiring a rental car. You're probably familiar with that.
Mm.
So it's essential to agree the condition of everything at the beginning of the tenancy. You and the landlord should each have a signed schedule, so there's no argument about it when you move out.
So what are the other responsibilities of the tenant?
Well, the tenant is responsible for taking a certain amount of care of the property, and this could include damage to sinks or loos, unblocking sinks or changing a fuse if necessary. It depends. If you rent a house, for example, and the drains from it get blocked, you'd probably be expected to pay the cost of unblocking the drains. In the case of the more expensive accommodation, the landlord can require the tenant to have more responsibility for the upkeep of the accommodation. The written AST will set this out, and it's up to the person who wants to rent the property whether they're prepared to accept the extra responsibility. And I'm thinking of things like mowing the lawn.
Yeah, of course. How is a tenant covered by an AST protected from being thrown out on the street, as you referred to earlier?
Well, during a fixed-term tenancy, a landlord must have a valid reason to evict a tenant. The reason can be, for example, the tenant has rent arrears, or is regularly late in paying the rent, has broken the terms of the lease, has allowed the condition of the accommodation to get worse, or has caused nuisance or annoyance. But here's the big difference. If the landlord wishes to evict a tenant before the end of the term, he has to apply to a court for a possession order, something a court will only grant if it's satisfied that a valid reason exists. A landlord can give 2 months' notice without having a reason, but that notice cannot run out before the end of the fixed term. After the end of the fixed term, a reason doesn't have to be given, but 2 months' notice, the 2 months' notice rule still applies.
My word. Brian, well, as you said at the outset, this is quite an involved subject. But thank you very much for going into so much detail. Do you have a topic ready for your next visit?
Well, some years ago, I qualified as a family mediator.
Uh-huh.
So perhaps I could talk about mediation and divorce.
Good stuff. All right. We'll look forward to that. Thank you very much indeed, Brian.
Thank you, Scott.